Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast that explores the corners of the Star Wars galaxy that are often left dark and unused. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is my good friend, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matt, how you doing?
John, I'm doing great. I kind of feel like, does that mean we're stuck in like that corner of Mos Eisley Cantina that's never been cleaned, like literally ever?
Yes, that is exactly where we are.
Okay.
But honestly, comparing the two places, I would rather be stuck there than in a dark, dank corner in Takodana, however you pronounce it, because I never say it on screen. Because based on the stories that were released before Force Awakens came out, there's some downright horrifying stuff happening there. Whereas at Mos Eisley, the worst you have to deal with is a dry heat. There's no mold even.
That's very true. You know, I was also thinking of another worst place, which is the Pike homeworld. That place just looked awful. I mean, I don't want to know what's going on in the dungeons down there. And let's talk about something nicer. I don't know. What do you say?
Okay, yeah, even nicer than the sports bar that's in the bottom levels of Coruscant.
Oh, that was a nice place. Because yeah,
I kind of dig that place.
Yeah.
I mean, you got some off-track betting for the pod races and everything, and
Death Stick sellers.
Well, you know, you know what? Who am I to judge?
I don't. I mean, I can't say it's right or wrong. It's not my galaxy.
Exactly. Exactly. We're it's a diaspora of a galaxy.
Exactly.
Well, this week, as opposed to favorite night spots, although maybe we'll talk about that in the future.
That is a good one, actually. I like that idea.
Yeah, right?
Where would you like to go get a drink with Obi-Wan? Obi-Wan's favorite watering holes.
His list is probably enormous.
That's what his little black book is full of.
That's right. Yeah, Luke thought he was going to get instructions on how to build his lightsaber, but instead he just, what are all these bars that are listed here? I don't know any of these places. Wow, that would actually be great for Luke, don't you think?
You know, after all that Luke goes through, especially by the end of episode 6, I think he probably just went to a bar for a while.
Yeah,
he probably
established the first one ever on Endor.
Yes.
It's like, I don't care. We're fermenting something. Speaking of little instruction books left for Luke, this week we will be talking about lightsabers. And as we all know, that ties into the little black book with Obi-Wan, because he did leave instructions back for Luke to construct one. And so what we're going to look at is we're going to look at lightsabers through the lens of our favorite ones, through the lens of what they mean to the saga, those sorts of things. Because honestly, what the lightsaber has come to mean has actually changed the way that the saga has over time. It's gone from tool to symbol to story point, frankly, in a lot of different ways. But before we get to that topic, Matthew, I want to fulfill a long-standing promise that we made to read some of our reviews that we've gotten on the iTunes store.
I think that's a great idea, John.
Well, thank you, Matt. And you know what? I'll fire first, and I'll go ahead and start with a review that we got. And again, if you want to give us a review, you can find us on the iTunes store, and we appreciate the reviews that we've gotten. We appreciate any reviews we will get. And it's really the reaction that we've had to this show has been so phenomenally humbling from the get-go.
Definitely.
Like we cannot express enough how much it means to us to know that people are out there not just listening, but enjoying what we're doing. So thank you, everybody, for your reviews. It really does mean the world to us. And the first review we'll read today is actually from a user, Geeks of Christ, and their review is titled Pure Star Wars, and they gave us 5 stars. So thank you, guys. And what they wrote was, "This is a great podcast to go to when you just need some time to geek out. It's fun, light, and promises to never go negative, which is a very refreshing change of pace. I can't wait to listen to more. Great job, guys." So Wow. Thank you. That's an amazing review. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that wow, goodness. I don't even know what to say to that, but thank you.
I know,
you.
Right?
Yeah. Well, the next one is from Ryan 123450, and goodness, thanks for, you know, stealing my locker combination. I need to go change that now for my luggage as well. So, but their review says, like no other Star Wars podcast. As always, Matt and John offer insightful Star Wars discussion, and in this podcast, they are talking about the little things, stuff that no one else in Star Wars podcasting community is talking about. So far, they come up with some unique and fun discussions. Definitely recommended.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Woo.
You know what? Let's dive in here at this point. We'll read a couple more reviews later on in the show, but let's dive in here to lightsabers. And I think probably the best way to kick off this before we get too deep into, you know, the symbology of the lightsaber and what it's come to mean is I want to ask you, everybody's got a favorite, whether it's a car, whether it's a movie, whatever it is. And the Star Wars saga has offered us no shortage of lightsabers to look at and to enjoy. What's your favorite? What's at the top? I already know your answer.
Everybody
knows my
answer.
So give me your number one and your number two.
But my number one, I'll give real quick, obviously, is I love Obi-Wan Kenobi's lightsaber from episode 3. I think it's a beautiful lightsaber. The design work there is so exquisite, and it's a nice... it's a nice look and feel, and it's very reminiscent of the one that he has in A New Hope, which is a little bit darker and a little bit gringier, and you could tell basically Obi-Wan probably had to change out a couple of the parts, but it's all pretty much the same. But the one in episode 3 is beautiful and fantastic. But, you know, more importantly, my second favorite, and I think this means more because everybody knew what I was going to say, I love Ahsoka's lightsaber. I think it is such a cool design, and it's it's so different from anything else that we got in the saga, really, I think. And so I'm really – that's a lightsaber for me. I remember when she first came on screen in the Clone Wars, and it kind of – you know, it has that strange kind of – cylinder to it, and it has you know, it's split down both sides, and it just, to me, it was a really interesting design and seemed evocative of nobody else that we'd ever seen on screen. So what I liked is that it looked inventive and beautiful and like a lightsaber. I mean, you know, just exactly like something you'd want to carry around. Like, they really put some thought into that, I think.
I agree. Actually, one of the things that is the part of her hilt, actually, to me, reminds me a bit of a flower.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like it's blooming. Like, this is, you know, this is her, the lightsaber is almost like the seed that represents the flower she's going to grow into.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that because she's a girl, but like, just, you know, everybody as a Jedi is expected to blossom, to grow, to be something alive and vibrant. And I honestly think the hilt echoes that. So I think that's a really strong
choice. Well, and what's kind of cool is that the only thing that it really reminds me of that we'd ever seen before is that the bottom is reminiscent of Kenobi's lightsaber from episode 1 and 2.
Yep. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm going to have to go with my number one, as tempted as I am to go with Mace Windu's, because purple is my favorite color.
And let's just say the one from episode 2 and 3 is a beautiful hilt. I mean, it's just incredible.
It is an absolutely gorgeous hilt. And I'm glad you actually called out that the lightsaber that he has on his belt in episode 1 is different. And they did one heck of a job retconning the hell out
of
that.
Yes, they did.
that was a really amazing just backflip to try to get around on that one. But which, if anybody doesn't know, they explained away the different hilt that he had in episode 1, saying that he was carrying it in honor of a Jedi that had fallen. I forget the Jedi's name at this point, but the Jedi had fallen recently, and they had had a very friendly relationship, and so the death had meant something to him. And so because that's the reason you see a different lightsaber on his hilt in all the publicity photos and any shots in the movie where he has a different hilt, because people immediately noticed. They said, why does he have a different lightsaber? And never mind the fact that the first toy had a blue blade to it.
It did, that was a lightsaber. That was the strangest retcon I've ever heard, honestly.
Well, and the thing is that, like, that's what made the purple lightsaber. I mean, honestly, still to me, that's what makes his lightsaber so meaningful, is that it is different, because Lucas had laid down that law. Blue and green, only blue and green. And then for Mace Windu to have purple, like, just immediately denotes how different and special he is. And so, you know what? I think I've actually talked myself into thinking I'm going to have to pick Windu's, because that's the one that I can pontificate on. The nostalgic favorite for me is Luke's from Return of the Jedi. Mm,
yeah.
And so I always want to put that one at the top of the list. But it's almost, strangely, it's almost like blade color is playing a factor for me. And I wonder if that, does blade color mean anything to you when you're looking at the hilts? Is there any meaning that you assign to it?
That's a great question. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, so when you're watching the original trilogy, you only see blue and then you see red, and that's all you know. And the only time that you see a different color is once Luke has ignited that brand new lightsaber in Return of the Jedi. And I think there's that collective gasp as fans, especially as old as we are, John, that were like, it's not the same color. It's a different color. You know, like it kind of blew our minds thinking, what? You know, so I have a nostalgic favorite for that Luke lightsaber as well, just because of that feeling I got seeing it be a different color. Now, for me personally, I always like the blue because that's the color of Obi-Wan. And that's the color I tend to pick the most. Like, if I'm playing a game and I get to pick my lightsaber color, it's probably going to be blue just
now,
because of that.
With that coloration, though, even the color blue has sort of it's been a little fungible through time, where like that blue has shifted a little bit as the technologies have gotten better, you know, like as they've gone from, like, you know, animating a spinning rod to, you know, which of course makes me think of The Simpsons, the inanimate carbon rod. But anyway, they go from animating, a reflective rod to, like, straight up computer perfection in terms of color consistencies. And so is there a shade of blue that you like better than another shade of blue?
I think the shade of blue that I liked the most was what they did in episode 3. With Anakin and Obi-Wan's lightsabers. I feel like that, to me, and I really enjoyed, I have to say, the Clone Wars. I felt like the way that they animated the lightsabers was really beautiful, you know, and came across really, really well. And obviously, always consistent, because it's so easy to be consistent in animation like that. But I thought that, I really enjoyed the Clone Wars and, of course, the episode 3 colorization. So John, you know, you like this purple lightsaber. Did it ever bother you that there weren't other colors? Because obviously, you know, like we see in the Old Republic game, Knights of the Old Republic, you see in other games and you see in other places different colors. And of course, in the EU, we get lots of other colors, and mainly just that's because they're not going to Ilium and pulling their lightsabers from one place. And the Clone Wars gave us this thing where it showed us that the crystals aren't a color.
Right.
They are attuned to the Jedi that creates them. So what do you think about that? Do you wish there had been more colors, like George had been a little less, dogmatic about there's only blue, green, and red, and then purple if you're Mace Windu?
That's a really good question, because there's a part of me, because with the EU, they retconned the whole, you know, well, they're not getting the crystals from the right, because they did have, Mara Jade had a purple saber at one point.
Yep.
So she predates Windu with the purple, but they even had, I think actually in one of the earlier Jedi games, I think Adi Gallia had a red saber. It was like reddish orange. In that game, she had one, which even, you know, back then was like, wait, no, that's Sith. I think with the original trilogy, it doesn't stand out as much, because you really only see three people wielding a lightsaber. And so it's like, whatever. With the prequel trilogy, Yeah, it seemed a slightly strange choice to have everybody have the same color, blue or green, blue or green, blue or green. But I think you could almost talk yourself into accepting it now, because you can look at it as it's another sign that the order has become too strict, too stringent in its own rules, where, like, in the original trilogy, there was almost this feeling that, like, a lightsaber was a personal reflection of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, the hilt that you chose, and the hilts are still personalized, of course, you know, even in the, you know, even in the prequel trilogy, but there's more of a feeling of formality. Like, they feel that the lightsabers have tools. Like, I remember actually being a little crestfallen, no lie, in episode two, the first time I saw it, when the two Jedi just toss spare lightsabers to mm-hmm. Anakin and Obi-Wan. And it was that moment where I sort of really had to take a leap of acceptance to be like, well, okay, I guess they're just tools to the Jedi at this point. You know, like, that was the biggest sign to me that a lightsaber had lost, even though, you know, Obi-Wan has the whole, you know, speech, this weapon is your life. It seemed like the lightsaber became so utilitarian at that point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. I don't know if I completely agree, because I feel like at that point they just needed that tool to be able to defend themselves. But then obviously, you know, once you get back into episode three, Obi-Wan and Anakin have both recreated their own lightsaber. Mm-hmm. You know, they have gone back and created their own feel. And so, you know, I think that's something that I really, really like that happens throughout the saga. And, you know, again, to me, I thought what was really cool that the Clone Wars did is showing us the specialness of a Jedi creating their lightsaber and what it really meant, you know, because right. It was a part of their trials of mastering the Force, because the only way to create a lightsaber and to imbibe it with the full power of the Force, really, was to put it together through the Force. Only a Jedi, or, you know, obviously a Sith, could create their own lightsaber and actually make it work correctly. And I thought that was just a really neat thing. So it showed that, you know, yes, you can use somebody else's lightsaber, but at the same time, there's nothing like having the connection of creating your own lightsaber. It almost seems like the wand in Harry Potter, you know?
Yes, but let me take it a step further, just because this is aggressive negotiations. Another moment where I was crestfallen to a certain degree was Grievous, because the digital modeling that they did, he's holding basically a lightsaber hilt at one point that looks exactly like Obi-Wan's.
Yes.
Like, exactly like Obi-Wan's. And the only way I have been able, no lie, to go back and I've constructed something in my head canon is seeing Obi-Wan's lightsaber in two different hands, like, just drilled home for me the more utilitarian thought. But the way I've gone back in my head canon, I've said in my head, well, Grievous and Obi-Wan have met before. And Grievous has taken his lightsaber. Like, Obi-Wan had to drop it to run. And so Grievous, in a way, is taunting Obi-Wan by using his own blade against him.
That's
sort of where I've gone.
I actually really like that. I think that makes the most sense because, you know, we knew through the Clone Wars they had met, you know, other times. Yep. And, you know, there were times when Obi-Wan you know, doesn't hold up so well or something happens. So, yeah, the fact that Obi-Wan could have lost his lightsaber before against Grievous and maybe in an attempt to, you know, like, throw the lightsaber at him or something, you know, anything could happen. And so, yes, it seems like it's not it's a way of Grievous taunting. I love that. So, you know what? One of the other things that John and I wanted to touch on, you know, we learned from that mm-hmm. that great Clone Wars episode as well, where those younglings are making their lightsabers, is that, and I thought this was a shock for everyone, it is a droid who helps these Jedi put together their light. What did you think about Huang? And one, I mean, he's the incomparable David Tennant voicing him, and then two, the fact that this is, you know, a droid that's existed for almost a millennia, helping Jedi create a lightsaber.
I like the idea because of the extreme patience that's going to be needed with some of the kids putting the lightsabers together for the first time, as well as, and again, this is a headcanon moment, I can imagine that there have been times where things have gone wrong and it's easier to replace a droid's arms than a being's arms. You know what I'm saying? Like, say some kid somewhere along the way put it together really wrong, like disastrously wrong. So long as the memory core of that droid is alive, they can put them in, you know, and resurrect that knowledge easier. It's like, and the droid additionally could learn through time from the mistakes that others made to say, yeah, you know, and catch them earlier, you know, like to say, no, 900, you know, like he might not say this, but he can say 800 years ago, I saw somebody do this exact same thing. No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, no, and what I love about the whole thing is the way that in which he talks about lightsabers and the way in which a lightsaber reflects somehow the personality. And, mm-hmm. you know, what I liked there is that they show the young Jedi, the Wookiee, you know, and that his lightsaber mm-hmm. would have a wood casing to it, you know.
Right.
And so that really personalization that you know, I think that in episode two, the creature shop and the fabrication shop at Lucasfilm kind of fell off the... They didn't do what they should have done, which mm-hmm. is really craft, you know, 100 different lightsaber hilts, but that actually right. seemed to kind of fit the character they were going for. Mm-hmm. It basically lacked what I felt like... You would have seen in, say, like Lord of the Rings, where everything has a purpose for the character that it's being given to. And okay, those sure. different Jedi should have had more unique lightsaber designs, like Gungi does in the Clone Wars, where it's very specific for him and it feels like it fits with that character.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that definitely speaks to... as we all know, Lucas's philosophy of background lightsaber to him is, nobody's going to see that too close. You know, like I think that in a sense that philosophy, and I'm not knocking Lucas for it, because as a filmmaker or a producer, it's like, I want to make 100 different lightsaber hilts. What, for somebody who's going to be on screen for like 2 seconds? No, just give them a rod and that's good enough. Like, I can understand that thinking, but I think it's an underestimation of the fans who are going to want to see mm-hmm. as yep. many different ones. And those utilitarian ones, I mean, I guess maybe that speaks to the design of the two that are tossed to them, is that those hilts lack personality, like any personality. So maybe that's a visual cue in and of itself to say, well, yeah, we have some emergency lightsabers laying around, but you know what I'm saying?
Yep, like, exactly.
Just
like,
in case.
Like, you have, you know, the emergency health kit, you know, like somebody gets hurt, right. but you have, yeah. you also have an emergency lightsaber in there, which is very generic, you know?
Oh, do you think maybe in Obi-Wan's, in like Jedi Starfighters, because Obi-Wan has like repair parts that he ejects, you know, basically all the kit stuff that he ejects in episode two to detonate the missile and get away from Jango Fett. Do you think that, like, there's a spare lightsaber in every single Jedi Starfighter just in case? Like, you go and you get engaged and, like, you lose your saber, you can run back to your ship and get a lightsaber?
Hmm.
Let's write that into canon.
I like it. That's, I actually like
I
it.
See nothing
I think
to
it
contradict.
Makes a lot of sense, actually, that you would have that in a Jedi Starfighter just in case something happened to your lightsaber, you have another one yeah. handy. I think that's a...
it's like a road flip.
Yeah, I like it. okay, so we've talked about some Jedi lightsabers. What about Sith lightsabers? Who are your favorite Sith lightsabers?
Oh, it's got to be Palpatine. Because the Palpatine's lightsaber hilt just completely reflects somebody who, at some point at least, is a lover of art mm-hmm. and culture. And when you look around...
Well, he is from Naboo, so...
Right, exactly. It looks like a lightsaber that would have been crafted by somebody that came from that culture, somebody who went to the opera, somebody who was a patron of the arts. That looks like the type of lightsaber hilt that would be created by somebody mm-hmm. like that. So that's my go-to answer. What's your choice?
You know, I think for me, I always thought that Asajj Ventress's lightsabers were very cool.
Yeah.
And they fit her so well as a character who, you know, because they kind of create that crooked bent in the middle. So they're not straight like Darth Maul. And to me, it was always like almost a sign that the character wasn't completely on one side or the other. She was somewhere more in the middle, even though she was a Sith acolyte from Dooku. She isn't quite straight and narrow on either side, you know, like that there's a bent to her, and that plays out in her character. But I also liked I have to say, I love the Dooku lightsaber because...
Oh, that is a good choice.
As well, it was very much in the vein of the character that he had become crooked and bent, you know, that he had become twisted with evil. And I really liked that it was reflected in the lightsaber design he created as a Sith. It's a beautiful, it's just a beautiful hilt and created, and we'd never seen this before, but the fencing style that he has, which is archaic and not really given much thought in the Jedi Order at this moment, and at least in that moment there, was wonderful as well.
Dooku's lightsaber is really cool. And you know, and that's the beautiful thing. I mean, honestly, when you think about the lightsabers and everything, like what a testament to just the artistry that goes in, that went into these things. I mean, yeah, I've sat there and, you know, knocked sort of like the more utilitarian approach and everything, but like there really is some art. Like when they get the lightsaber hilts right, they really got them right. Like, and you can see a growth actually, because like when you look at, you know, the original trilogy, you see three hilts. And, you know, and Luke's is based on Obi-Wan's from A New Hope. They were nice. They were good. They were interesting to look at. But there is a real artistry to what they did in the prequels when they did take the time to make something that was unique to the character. And so, yeah, I think that's a good pull. Dooku's hilt is pretty awesome.
Well, and I got to call out, too. I think that is exactly what happened when they created Kanan's lightsaber for Rebels, that they really went to the drawing board and was like, okay, what is something that we kind of haven't seen in a lightsaber design? And I think his lightsaber design, it has this evocative feel of the Ralph McQuarrie designs you see.
Sure.
And I really, really appreciate that. Because there's an artistry to it that they put a lot of thought, just like I feel like they did with Ahsoka's. Okay, what is this brand new character? What is this brand new Jedi type character's lightsaber going to look like? Because that's going to be important. And yeah. I felt like that really happened there in that design. And I have to say, I really like Kanan's lightsaber. I think it's a beautiful hilt. It's so simple and elegant, which is kind of funny coming from Kanan. Because he's not elegant at all, but his lightsaber design is something that feels, to me, it almost feels like thousands of years of generations of Jedi poured into kind of this one lightsaber hilt. So I think it was something that Rebels really did get right.
I agree. And the thing that I keyed on that I always liked was that he could take it apart.
Yes.
Because I think because you talk about the symbolism relevant to the character, you're talking about somebody who's been broken, right? Who isn't whole anymore. And the only time that he is whole is when he's being a Jedi. Mm-hmm.
John, before we're going to get back to some reviews, but I wanted to ask you one question. Are there any lightsaber designs that just are abominations to you, or you're just like, oh, I hate this design. It's awful.
Nothing that was an abomination to me. That would be going too far.
Okay.
But I will say that the one that I thought there was not enough thought put into was Yoda's, actually.
Interesting.
And it did. Well, Yoda's looked like a mini Vader or a mini Anakin from episode 2. Like, it had the same type of the casing ended the same way. It looked very, very much like Anakin's. And so that didn't strike true to me. And it took me time to actually warm up to Qui-Gon's.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it did. It did. Qui-Gon's did not blow me out of the water when I saw it. I was like, eh. But there haven't been any that I would I would really call like duds. What about, I mean, you know, there were the utilitarian ones, but I kind of give those a pass.
So I praised Rebels, but I'm about to knock it down. The Ezra lightsaber, I'm not a huge fan of. It's okay, but hey, it's gone now. So, I have to say that the Inquisitor lightsabers are just awful. And the fact that apparently they're go-go gadget helicopters as well just destroyed me. I was like, this is the worst thing I've seen in Star Wars ever. So for me personally, that was kind of an unforgivable moment in Rebels.
Interesting.
So other than that, though, I think, you know, all the lightsaber designs are very interesting. And you know what I find most interesting is the fact that Yoda's is reminiscent of Vader's in the sense that there is a direct line from Yoda to Vader of who trains who. So I like that strange correlation that in some ways Yoda is responsible for Vader.
Interesting. I can accept that reasoning, but it just seemed to me like it was a shortcut to modeling. But if there's one thing that both of us respect about each other, it's our ability to build really solid headcanon. So I'm going to take that. And I'm going to take that. I'm going to mull that over. I'm probably going to accept that as part of my own headcanon. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. Like you said, we were going to get back to reviews. We'll read a few more before the show's out. And so let's jump back into that. And I have one here from Kid at Heart 33 that says they've done it again. It's another 5-star review. Again, thank you so much for that. And the review says, yet another amazing podcast. So glad to hear other opinions about the Star Wars universe. So thank you for the 5 stars and thank you for calling us amazing. That's nice. And we're glad that you think our opinions are worth hearing.
Yeah, definitely. Because otherwise, I'm not sure why you'd be listening.
Touche.
Well, we have another great 5-star review from CBS Spock. And the title is Great Star Wars Discussion. Matt and John bring their great discussions from the Star Wars episodes of the 602 Club podcast to this show. This time, they discuss a specific topic on each show. This isn't your typical Star Wars podcast show. This is a really enjoyable show to listen to. Well, thank you so much, CBS Spock. That really means a lot to us.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we were going for, was not being your typical Star Wars show. So I'm glad to hear that we hit the mark with you. That's cool. Thank you. Appreciate that. And then one last one that we'll read on this show. It's from Morris Isley. No, must be from Mos Eisley.
And they probably run into Kessel Junkie all the time.
Who doesn't run into Kessel Junkie, honestly? That guy gets around.
Like a record.
It's another 5-star review. Thank you. It says, terrific podcast with great chemistry. It says, Matt and John put on a fantastic and entertaining show with great audio quality and excellent thought-provoking topics. If you like taking a deeper dive into the wars, you should be listening to this podcast. Wow. Thank you. And considering the trouble I had with chemistry as a topic in high school, I'm glad to hear that I'm finally involved in great chemistry.
Hopefully, John, it's not the first time. I know you're a married man, so I'm hoping there's some great chemistry there. So if this is the first time that you really feel like there's great chemistry, I hope your wife doesn't listen to this show.
The first time without using a Jedi mind trick.
Okay.
How about that? It's the world's most sustained Jedi mind trick in history.
You got her. So you lucky devil, you.
Yeah, well, she's the lucky one. But this has been a great topic and really enjoyed talking about it and really enjoyed reading the reviews. Again, it means so much to us. And if you want to reach out to us online, again, you can give us a review on iTunes. Find us over there. You can find us over on the Nerd Party at thenerdparty.com, where we have some sister shows over there as well, the Senate Floor, the Filibuster, and Nerd Nuptial, part of the Nerd Party family. So if you like this show, give those a try as well. But that's where they can find us over on the Nerd Party. Matt, where can they go find you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm also doing a few podcasts over on the Trek FM network. I do Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We get a chance to interview the authors. It's a ton of fun. I also do the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, which is a ton of fun. I mean, we're talking about all sorts of great geek topics over there. You know, we love Star Trek on Trek FM, but sometimes you need to talk about all the other fandoms you love. And we even have a Star Wars special feed over there. So just check it out. I think you're really gonna love it. And then, of course, I also do The Orb with Chris Jones, where we're talking about Deep Space Nine. And then I'm going to mention one more thing. I think that everybody should check out Letterboxd.com. John, we're both on there, yes. And that's a great place for people to share the movies that they love and what they like to watch. You can create lists. I'm on there at MRushing02. So be sure to check that out as well. And then, of course, before, John, that I let everybody know where they can find you, you could find the show on Twitter at The Jedi Masters, so please follow us there. And you can also email us at an@thenerdparty.com.
Yes, and we would love to hear from you. And actually, tying into Letterboxd, I think that it would be great because we have our own listings of the Star Wars movies.
Yes, we do.
In our preferential order. I think it would be great to hear from you listeners out there. Go on Letterboxd. It's a free place to set it up, and I think it would be really great. Send us your rankings. Let us know like how the Star Wars movies break down for you.
That would be
and
great.
Don't forget the two Ewok movies and the holiday special. They count. They're canon in my book. Go ahead and let us know. Come on over to the facebook.com/thenerdparty. You can find us over there too. And you can, if you want to harass me, you can find me over on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. You can also find me over on the Trek FM network, co-hosting Commentary Trek Stars with Mike Schindler, where we look at the non-Trek work of Trek creators. And you can find me on a podcast that I co-host with my buddy Craig called Words with Nerds, where we take a larger view of geekdom, to borrow a line from Palpatine. So, we have a whole ton of ways you can reach out to the show, to us. Please, thank you again to everybody that's left a review. And if you haven't had a chance yet, thank you to everybody who's just interacting and listening. We do appreciate you very deeply. And with that, Matt, I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.